I'm very short, but I have to do that a lot, so I know what I'm doing. Okay. The night never ended when one of us died. The night never ended when one of us died. The dice and smoke kept rolling. The town we lived in already felt like the end. When the phone rung, I was always the one to answer. Someone asking for directions, but they couldn't hear my small voice over everyone sighing resolutely together about where we'd ended up. From the porch, all you could smell was the waste plant. But when they sent the boy cousin to the corner store for more beer, I ran to it. The way we ran to base, followed him there with my eyes, which saw what the grown folks didn't want us to see, which kept inside the self what they could not. My auntie had on gold boots, lumens. She stood beneath the wind chime inside a lightless vacuum connecting new ports like constellations, the burning fresh to the burning out, the boots being the only reason I noticed her there. When she sat down at the card table, her belly was still a perfect globe, just like the poof on her head, the puff exiting her lips like a life expiring. When Uncle's backhand met her cheek for asking, not thinking where he was headed on his way out the door, she fell from grace like that angel who knew too much, leaving one boot upright on the linoleum, ownerless but luminous nonetheless. Hadn't she learned by her age you only escape into yet another paradise to fall from? The party continued under the lights that washed the poor country of my parents' kitchen red. So when the blood ran down Auntie's legs, we all thought it was her water had broken. It is best not to confide in anyone your own victimhood. When a family's pain falls into a girl, only she can bring it out of her body alone, by death or instrument, embryonic little lyrics squeezed out onto the screen or canvas or page. Is the new book, so I don't know where things are yet. Thank you, Joan and Chris, for having me. This is like my first real reading in Pittsburgh. I moved here 2 years ago, so Joan got some sense. Okay, I was like, "What's going?" No, I know Pittsburgh. Y'all hard up here. Y'all like, you an outsider? Fucking, you gotta fucking charm us first. But I'm happy to be here and like. You know, I'm glad it took this long for me to get a reading here because, like, now I have, like, 8 friends here that are, like, you know, and that's nice. So, actually, and also Soledad, who I met in 2014, and Dave, and, yeah, so it's good. Wait 2 years before you read somewhere when you move. Okay. My first kiss was in a choir room where we hung the white robes. It was the drummer. It was the drums. My first kiss was with a girl who shared a name with my older sister in the strip club on the corner that held women like secrets. My first kiss was French for already, the first word in the phrase already seen. Voo, voo, voo in the sun-striped Sunday room and us white-robed. My first kiss was innocent the way animals are innocent. Holy, the way blood is holy. My blood beat was the drummer. It was the drums I entered suddenly and forever. Sister, my sister, and me already seen. That's how it felt. Our sun-striped skin, the faint piano, the robes hung up. I'm like really cute, but my poems aren't, sorry. I'm like, I don't know if I match, but you know. I'm gonna read one book, no I won't, but you know. One poem from the first book, which I'm tired of reading from, but love her, she's like 5 years old this year, and this is like the only copy I have at this point. which means I don't need to sell anymore because they're sold. And but if you want one, I think like Whitewell has it, City of Asylum, and all those places. Whitewell actually did my launch during the pandemic, which I was really grateful for. So, and that was before I knew I'd be here. So, very serendipitous. Okay, this is the one poem from Horsepower I'm going to read is Elegy for Kentucky. So I grew up outside of Churchill Downs where they run the Kentucky Derby, but I grew up Stable Side, which was like a whole hustle culture back there. We had a lot going on, working class, like peripheral economies. And so throughout the collection, the speaker and this horse, which is like, I think of as the birth horse, because it was the horse the year she was born, sort of morph in and out of each other. So that just might be important. Elegy for Kentucky. Nowhere to drive night upon night that last summer, but back to the cokey couple I was crashing with in their 26-year habit. On the way there, the same horse always dying at the curve before I turned like a kitschy disco ball onto their street, name I can't recall. There she lay toppled like a toy figurine, calm but huffing, a laboring machine making steam, though the cold air belonged to June, its grief. A filly, done before becoming a mother, great belly black and wide as all surrender, and that magnificent face still against the grass, waiting on the end. There she was every time, whispering something to me, a line throbbing, a visible heartbeat I watched in the mirror for hours with my huge horse eyes. I needed to see her to make sure she was still there. I went the same way each evening, wanting to feel something, to see this once immortal creature get up. Any weak thing was welcome to finish me then, and when he came into the room with bridle and bit on his 26-year high, when he came up on me where I was lying at that curve in my mind, arms and teeth numb, I did not resist. Just a muted yell inside for months before it lit on me like an ancestor. As a child, I followed my grandfather across the street behind our house, Longfield Avenue, but backside of the track where the thoroughbreds for that maze derby were trapped, bored of what they were bred for, all their royalty within a corral. My hand, a child's offering, was empty when they snorted and drew their worn noses across my palm, yet it was in their nature to remain friendly toward me. My home did not keep its promise after my grandfather died. There was no protection for what I was without him, lone black filly, finished before becoming. She must have tired of standing there high-headed, waiting for me to ride her out of that war, to call out, "Let's go, we are done here." Okay, I don't use any substances anymore. I would say unfortunately, but it's kind of cool. It's kind of nice. But anyways, when I used to smoke weed, I love to watch like documentaries. And like sometimes I still have like cravings, and so like Tom Hanks came out with this new nature documentary recently, and I was like, "Ooh, that would be so good with a joint." But I was like, "Damn." But I happened to be high, and then I came up on this Explained episode that was like about marijuana and learned some really cool facts. So I thought I would use them. This poem is called Desire. To heighten THC levels and make cannabis more potent, the female plant erupting in pollen is isolated from the male plant, made to long, beg the seed. It eventually begins to overproduce a sticky psychoactive resin. Kinda grotesque, actually, says Michael Pollan about the oozing female flowers glittering in diamond tears. Flowers which have exploded in vain to access the male, wrote Linnaeus, father of botany, in 1753, sundering nature into taxonomies, the carceral gender fantasy that created the new world. But outside of it, Suzanne Césaire's plant human is abandoning herself to the rhythm of universal life, vegetating in laborless rebellion. and Jane Cortez is calling, "Tear the sexual leaves of grief from your heart." It's the first time I read that poem out loud. I was like, damn, this is fucked up. Even plants got to deal with misogyny and shit. Like, can we just come? God damn it. Always trying to control our, you know, fuck. That's why women are undersexed. No, I'm just kidding. I'm sure there are women in here having a great sex life. They're like 50, and I'm happy for them. My time is coming. Okay. This last poem I'm going to read, sorry. Just like, you know, I don't know how not to be earnest. Okay. This is a new poem, one of the newest poems. It's not in this book. It's not in the new book. And I moved here from Houston. This poem is called Houston. Never mind that I stepped outside for a cigarette one night and mistook the flying American cockroach for a nocturnal hummingbird, drifting through the Marquez landscape, its delusional heat. Never mind the constant construction blocking the sidewalk or statistics like 1.5 road rage shootings on average per day, the drivers who treated me walking as a mirage. I loved coming down Westheimer during sunset, light flaming off the 80s sci-fi skyline, grabbing wee bon mi and barbecue in a drive-thru, the Bam Bam at Juiceland. Does it matter that I once nearly shot two big bug suckers off my wall with the Taurus G2C? Or that I lusted after the mansions in River Oaks, downloading addresses to my mind, scrolling Zillow back in my mildewed apartment to see inside the lives of Texas oil families? What about the fact that no one loved me naked? Or that the only living creatures I saw my first few months there were Luna, that's my dog, and the little lizards that slithered across concrete when my big foot quaked their grass beds? I was the catastrophe to a world I couldn't see, and this was the city where it happened, where I rode an ambulance to the almost end, where I came to driving down the street blasted that one last drunk, where I fucked sober the one who built rockets and the one who built stages. It was a landscape of lilt and luminance, where I quit using, quit smoking, quit the only way I'd known, to walk the bayou and return to the mind I tried to escape, the me before, the forgotten child. Thank you.
Wow. Yes. Well,